The U.S. Army tried to use camels? We'll find out on this week's episode of The Internet Says It's True. Hey, welcome. Welcome to The Internet Says It's True, where every week we learn something that sounds like I just made it up, but it's really true. Part of the WCBE podcast experience, my name is Michael Kent. This is episode 170. I hope you're all doing well. I appreciate you listening. Hey, if you're looking for a last-minute gift idea for me, becoming a Tizziter by joining Patreon would be about the best gift a guy could hope for.
If any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me,
I have one. I'd like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight.
I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there in Melody Lane with all the other rich people. And I want him brought right here with a big ribbon on his head.
And if you can't afford to abduct Frank Shirley, you can become a Tizziter at patreon.com/MichaelKent. Pledge anywhere from $1 to, you know, whatever your heart desires. That unlocks tons of bonuses for you. You can join the growing community there and get some stickers in the mail. Again, that's patreon.com/MichaelKent. Hallelujah. Holy shit, where's the Tylenol? I am once again in Pittsburgh doing some family stuff, taking a break from writing new episodes for the next few weeks. The next new episode will be 174 on January 1st. So today's episode was first released February 14 of 2022. And it was episode 76. It's all about a strange project that the U.S. Army tried and an interesting legend that goes along with it. So, you know what time it is. Say it along with me. Let's get on with it.
Get on with it.
Yes! Get on with it!
Hi, Michael. It's Rory Raven calling from spooky Salem, Massachusetts. I, for one, would love to see you do an episode on the United States Camel Corps, please and thank you.
I have heard of this before, and I find it fascinating. Camels aren't native to America, but they were very nearly introduced to a point where they would be native to America. I mean, horses aren't native to this country either. They were, but they were in America thousands of years ago, went extinct in this country, then were reintroduced by the Spanish, and now we think of horses as part of American culture. We've got the climate in this country, particularly in the Southwest, where it seems like it would make sense to have camels doing our work for us, but it never caught on. I took the week to look into it. In Eagle Creek, Arizona, in 1883, the legend of the Red Ghost was born. A red-haired beast, 20 to 30 feet tall, roaming the desert with a devilish-looking ghost rider on its back. The legend went on for 10 years until the truth was discovered. And the truth was almost as fantastical and amazing as the legend. It started when a couple of ranchers' wives saw the beast. While one looked on from her window, the other went outside to see what was going on. Their dog was going crazy. The woman was discovered later, trampled to death. The bushes and the trees nearby had snagged some of the beast's red fur. Reports of the red ghost continued, and they were always the same, a large beast with a ghostly rider. It wasn't until 1893 that farmer Mizzou Hastings shot the beast, eating the crops in his field. It was a camel. The leather straps and harness on its back were so tight they were cutting into the poor animal's flesh, and sure enough, strapped on the camel's back was the skeleton of a man, bits of clothing and hair still blowing in the wind. No one knows exactly why the man was on the camel. He could have been someone trying to escape the desert, desperate for water. It could have been a soldier who tried to ride the beast and failed. But we know where the camel came from. It's well documented. And that's where we begin today's story. In the Civil War, George H. Crossman was a quartermaster for the Union Army. But before that, he was a soldier in the Indian Wars and fought in Florida. That's where he was able to see the expansive need for transportation of cargo just to supply and feed an army in the field. This is where he first came up with the idea that maybe pack animals being used in the Middle East would work well in the United States for transporting materials. The nation was expanding west, and the massive amounts of land that needed to be covered was difficult for men and for the animals that were available to them, namely horses and mules. Crossing huge prairies, rivers, and difficult mountain terrain seemed like too difficult a task, and the Intercontinental Railroad wouldn't be completed for decades. He had heard about the usefulness of camels, so he conducted an extensive study and sent his results to Washington. Here's an excerpt from his report which lays out his reasoning. Quote, or strength in carrying burdens for patient endurance of labor and privation of food, water, and rest, and in some respects, speed also. The camel and dromedary, as the Arabian camel is called, are unrivaled among animals. The ordinary loads for camels are from 7 to 900 pounds each, and with these, they can travel from 30 to 40 miles a day for many days in succession. They will go without water and with but little food for 6 or 8 days, or it is said even longer. Their feet are alike well suited for traversing grassy or sandy plains or rough rocky hills and paths, and they require no shoeing. End quote. His request for camels fell on deaf ears. No one at the War Department cared to look into it, but as Crossman worked his way up in the Quartermaster Department and met Major Henry Wayne, who had also heard about the advantages of camels, together they brought up the idea once again. This time, they finally were heard by a young senator from Mississippi who would later go on to become the president of the Confederacy. Senator Jefferson Davis liked the idea of trying to use camels to help the Army transport cargo and tried for several years to get the War Department to take up the project. After Jeff Davis was appointed Secretary of War, he finally had enough power for the request to have teeth. The following year, President Franklin Pierce and Congress approved $30,000 for the import of a small amount of camels to the United States for a testing program. In the summer of 1854, Major Henry Wayne traveled to zoos in London and Paris to talk to animal keepers about camels. Lieutenant David Dixon Porter was the captain of the ship to bring them over, named the Supply. The two men met up in Italy and traveled to what is modern-day Tunisia to begin their expedition procuring camels. Over the next 5 months, they traveled to Malta, Greece, Turkey, and Egypt, gathering animals, and it wasn't easy. Some of the camels were sick and couldn't be transported. In some regions, they ran into legal problems with the export. They ended up with 33 animals on board, a mix of male and female dromedaries and Bactrian camels. A Bactrian camel has 2 humps, while a dromedary has 1. It wasn't until February of 1856 when they started home. And even the journey home was riddled with problems, mostly severe weather. It took 3 months to return home. During that time, 1 camel died and 2 more were born. But the men had spent so much time studying about camels that when they arrived in the U.S., all of the animals were in better health than when they left. The camels were unloaded at Indianola, Texas, a port that is now a ghost town, and were led 120 miles to San Antonio, then another 60 miles to Camp Verde, northwest of San Antonio. They set up a Middle Eastern-style corral for the camels, and David Dixon Porter left for Egypt to fill his ship with another load. He arrived the next January with 41 more camels. But how did they fare? How did these American military men adapt to training and using camels in their work? I'll get into that after a quick break. If you're looking for an awesome craft to do with your kids this holiday, I think I found the perfect thing. Kiss Naturals and Earthy Goods are DIY craft kits for kids that make it super easy for them to make their own soap, bath bombs, lip gloss, lip balm, and more. The products are natural and safe, and what's best is that when they use these products, they get to learn about how they're made and what makes a product natural, healthy, and safe to use. As I'm sure you know, so many of the products we use around the home are filled with crazy amounts of chemicals that we can't even pronounce, and that doesn't mean they're necessarily dangerous or anything, but we have no idea how the stuff is made or if it's even healthy. When you go to earthygoodnaturals.com, you'll see a variety of kits that not only teach your kids how to make the product, but as long as they're doing so, they're learning what's in them. So, for example, there's a kit where they can actually make their own toothpaste, and as they're doing that, they're learning about the ingredients, the sodium bicarbonate and the peppermint and the other ingredients that actually make it work. These DIY kits are a great bonding exercise for you to do with your kids, and when they actually use the products, they'll be able to say, "I made this." Once again, the company is Kiss Naturals and Earthy Goods. It's a family-owned company by some good old Canadians. Aren't Canadians just the nicest people you've ever met? So nice, in fact, they have agreed to give you, listeners to my show, 20% off. Use promo code INTERNET. Once again, that website is earthygoodnaturals.com, or just use the deals link in the show notes. Put in INTERNET as your promo code for 20% off, and you are well on your way to an awesome activity with you and your kids. If you love listening to this podcast every week and you want to show your support, that would mean a great deal to me. You can do that by becoming a Patreon member. We've got members at all levels, whether you want to pledge $1 a month or $10 a month. Just think about the value that you receive from this show. And if you like the histories and the stories that you learn about or the jokes that you hear, and if you think that they're worth it, consider signing up. For that, you get every episode ad-free and a week early, access to bonuses like the unedited videos of the guest appearances, and 20% off all merchandise. You can sign up today at patreon.com/Michael Kent. That's patreon.com/Michael Kent. Let's get back to the story. It was 1857, and through two successful but difficult trips across the ocean, the United States Army now owned 75 camels corralled at Camp Verde in Texas. It was time to test them. Now, the first test was an easy one. Six camels were tasked with accompanying mules driving a small wagon train to San Antonio. The six camels carried 3,648 pounds of oats. They made the trip in 2 days and shocked the military leaders who were assessing the trip. The soldiers hated the camels at first. They smelled bad, and if they got mad, they would bite or spit. But the biggest problem was that they weren't horses, and horses were what these men were used to, so they needed to be trained to work with the animals. The next test of the animals was a practical one. James Buchanan was the new president, and he was having a wagon road built from Fort Defiance, Arizona Territory, all the way west to the Colorado River at the California border. It would run the entire width of what is modern-day Arizona. It's just over 300 miles. The special order for the surveying team was that they were required to bring camels along. It was being used as a real-life test of the usefulness of these animals. The men protested but complied. They led a large team of camels from Fort Verde, Texas, to the starting point of the road surveying expedition in Fort Defiance. Then they set out west to survey uncharted land. Now, they had initially complained about the camels, but at one point on their journey, they got lost in a canyon. There was no food, no water, nothing for their mules to graze on, and the mules started freaking out, becoming frantic. The team of camels led the expedition 20 miles away to water, saving the lives of the entire group. After that, it was the camels they relied on to find water. By the time they had reached Colorado River, the camels had been driven over 1,200 miles in the middle of the summer. The leader of the expedition had this to say, quote, "I believe at this time I may speak for every man in our party when I say there is not one of them who would not prefer the most indifferent of our camels to four of our best mules," end quote. So why don't we have camels as pack animals in America? The simple answer is because of the Civil War. Remember that one of the most ardent supporters of this program was Jefferson Davis, who became the president of the Confederacy when the South seceded. Confederate soldiers raided and took over Camp Verde in February of 1861. While most of the camels were taken out and moved to various other camps by the Union soldiers, several were captured by the rebel army. They didn't know how to treat the animals, so they were abused. One of them was pushed off a cliff. Another was used in service, where it was killed in the Battle of Vicksburg. The remaining camels that were still being held by the Union Army had their fate decided by Lincoln's Secretary of War, Edwin M. Stanton. Stanton had no knowledge of the several successful tests of the camels' usefulness. He didn't understand or hadn't been properly briefed on what these camels could do for his army. He sold them all at auction. From here, the camels were split up across America, some of them being brought so far as British Columbia. Some were sold to circuses, others were used in mining operations in the American West, and some were simply turned loose into the wild. One of the main trainers of the camels, a Greek man from Syria named Haji Ali, or known simply as Hai Jali, continued working with some of the animals in nearby mining camps, but most of the remaining camels were abandoned. And this is how it came to be, that a camel would be roaming the American Southwest, causing ranchers to panic when they saw a beast that they didn't recognize. The war had come and gone. The country was in the midst of fighting with Reconstruction and severe economic depression. But out west, in Mojave County, Arizona, that camel that became known as the Red Ghost, the one that Mizzou Hastings shot on his ranch, had been roaming the desert for more than 30 years. It was no ghost. It was the last gasp of a failed program, one of the last pieces of the United States Camel Corps. Now it's time for the part of the podcast where I call a friend. Today I'm calling my friend magician Matt Franco. Matt appears nightly in the Matt Franco Theater in Las Vegas's Link Hotel and Experience. He was the winner of America's Got Talent. That's right, the winner of the show. And he was able to make time out of his incredibly busy performance schedule to join me. Matt Franco, it is good to see you again, my friend.
Great to see you, buddy.
I've been listening to your podcast, Mind Over Magic, with Eric Dittleman, and I dig it. I really enjoy the show. It's been a lot of fun. It's good. I'm a magician, and so I have, you know, my own relation to the things that you're talking about. But I feel like a lot of the stuff you talk about is, it would be interesting to non-magicians too, right?
I think it's somewhat universal. Yeah, I hope to think so, especially for people in performance and stuff. But a lot of times these things we're talking about are sort of can apply to whatever it is you're trying to achieve, whether it be art or sports or whatever else, right?
Yeah. And you're doing this while maintaining a 6-night-a-week show schedule at the Link. Matt Franco Magic Reinvented Nightly. You just started back recently. How's it going so far?
It's great. We've been back for, call it 8-9 months, something like that. And it feels so good to just be back on stage again. We've got our mask mandate just lifted. I guess we're one of the last few states here in Nevada. So audiences are unmasked as of a couple of days ago. And more people are coming to Vegas all of a sudden. So it's interesting. I don't know if it's because of that or a coincidence.
It's interesting. I was in Los Angeles performing a couple nights ago, and I had this exact discussion. I said, you know, I want to do more shows and do, but I feel like so much of it is, I'll be more excited to keep performing out once the mask mandates are lifted. And I'm seeing these mandates lifted here and there on the East Coast, but I had no idea that Vegas had already done that. That's really going to boom their economy, I think.
Yeah, no, I believe so too. And it's funny, last night I was talking to someone after the show and they said, oh my God, so-and-so, referring to one of the volunteers, so-and-so's expression when this happened. And I was like, wow, I haven't heard that in a while, because we haven't seen those expressions except for the eyes in a long, long time. So, you know, it's cool to get some of that, some more normalcy back. So,
yeah, people are a little bit looser and more relaxed when they don't have the mask on. And yeah, there's one particular spot in my act when the person on stage, their expression really matters. And I've been losing that.
Yes.
And I've been making a joke about it. Like, and that's the cool thing is whether they make the expression or not, I can say, you can't see it, but under that mask, their mouth is, you know, it's something
that
I've been able to do for a while. And anywho, so you were on Joke Story Trick a while back, which was my video podcast weekly web show thing. But this is something different. What I do for this, Matt, is I bring people on who know nothing about the topic. Not only do you not know about the topic, you don't even know what the topic is. So I say that because these questions are not meant for you to ace. Very few people get all five of them right. And so this is just sort of, hey, I just learned about this thing. I did a whole backstory on it. I'm curious if other people know about this thing. So that's what our first question is. And Matt, for the first question, we're playing for a joke. So if you get it right, I have to tell a joke. And if you get it wrong, you have to tell me a joke.
Oh boy. Oh no.
And it can be a joke book joke. It can be whatever you want. Okay. Here's your question. Before the,
I'm just trying to think of a joke now, knowing that I'm going to fail. But
yes.
Keep going.
Well, we'll put it this way. Don't worry about that now. We can cut and give you time to look up a joke on the internet if you get it wrong. Here we go.
Well, let's cross that bridge when we get there.
I talked to Eric and I said, I'm having Franco on the show. How is he with American history? And he said, Matt is really good with World's Greatest Magic trivia and like two movies.
And magic history.
And magic history in general and two movies. And so with that, I'm pleased to tell you, this has to do with neither. Before the American Civil War, so we're talking about before the American Civil War, the Army experimented with what form of transporting cargo? A, catapult, B, teleportation, or C, camels?
The Army experimented with transporting
cargo.
What was the exact question?
Yeah, this was a form of transporting cargo. So this is not necessarily for transporting troops,
but getting things like food supplies and different things from place to place.
Were experimenting with this before the Civil War.
That's correct. It's either catapult, teleportation, or camels.
I'm just going to think this out loud here. Catapulting what? I don't know. What could that mean? Is that like weaponry?
The cargo, whatever the cargo might be.
Oh, like catapulting cargo?
Yes.
From one place to the next?
Yes.
And teleportation, that to me sounds like on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the one that makes no sense because they can't, teleportation's not a real thing. So it's got to be A or C. That's my thinking.
Okay.
And you're expecting me to settle in on one.
You have to settle in on one.
Yeah, camel sounds like the most reasonable choice, but I don't know. Maybe it's sort of a trick question and it's catapulting, so I'm not sure.
I'm going to make you...
But you want me to settle in on one,
I'm going to make you lock into one.
I'm just going to... Maybe it's not so much of a trick question. Maybe... Did they experiment? I feel like you don't need to experiment with camels because you know that you can transport like a certain amount of weight on a camel. So let's go catapult.
The answer is camels. You should have trusted your gut, Matt. So the experimentation that had to take place was, is this an animal that our U.S. Army can use? Can the soldiers get used to using them? There was a little bit of adjustment that took place at first. Uh-huh. Because if camels aren't happy, they'll spit and they'll bite and they'll do all these things. So in the 1840s and 1850s, they brought over a few dozen camels from the Middle East. And there was the mm-hmm. U.S. Camel Corps in Texas for the U.S. Army. Mm-hmm. There was a corps of camel that they were experimenting with, as America was heading west and expanding. They couldn't go these expansive deserts and mountains and stuff with mules and people. They needed something else stronger that could go longer without food. So do you have a joke for me?
Oh, for one. do I have a joke? No.
All right. I'm going to tell you a joke to tell me if it's one that you'll tell. This might not be on brand. Okay. Here's my joke. What's the most difficult part of smelling mothballs? Getting their little legs apart. Moths. Balls. Legs.
What?
You don't get
it. So I'm Googling
joke.
A joke now? Yeah. That's what you want me to do?
Yes.
What's the best thing about Switzerland?
What?
I don't know, but the flag is a big plus.
It's literal. That's fantastic. You need to put that one in your magic reinvented nightly.
Yes.
There'll be an asterisk on the title of the show, and it'll be like, but jokes from the internet. Okay.
Exactly.
Question two. For this question, we're playing for a plug on your podcast. So if you get it wrong, you have to plug this show on your show, Mind Over Magic. And if you get it right, I'll plug your podcast next week in this show.
That's fair.
And this is another question nobody would know without Googling, and no Googling is allowed. How many sets of eyelids does a camel have? Is it A, 2, B, 3, or C, camels don't have eyelids?
I think camels can close their eyes, but I could be wrong about that, but I'm going to assume they do. So the option is 2, 3, or 0?
Yes.
Well, I just don't understand how they could have 3. That doesn't make sense that they would have a third one, because like it doesn't make sense. It has to be 2 or 0. So I'm back between A and C once again.
Yes.
Last time I went with A.
Once again, you're between like an more obvious answer and an impossible trick question answer.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the obvious one this time. So I'm going to say they have 2.
Unfortunately, Matt, the answer is B, 3. They do have 3 sets of eyelids. I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. I don't know how that works. Okay. I know that a lot of animals have like one eyelid and then one membrane that comes over in a different direction. But camels do. They have 3 sets of eyelids and they have 2 rows of eyelashes to keep sand out of their eyes. So it's an animal that's adapted to, you know, be really good at keeping sand out of its eyes, which you would think is important as they are commonly used in the desert.
So, I have just learned something new. Your yes, plug is well deserved.
Thank you. You've actually learned two new things now. Catapulting was not a form of transportation prior to the Civil War, and three sets of eyelids on camels. Super weird. Next time I go to the zoo and see a camel, I'm going to ask if I can see them somehow. I don't know how that's going to work, but all right, Matt, we're moving right along, and you're 0-2 for this question.
Yes, 0-2.
We are playing for a coveted "The Internet Says It's True" sticker. You can see the sticker here. It's a 3x3 sticky orange sticker. And if you get this correct, you'll get a sticker. If you don't get it right, no sticker for you. Here we go. One of the men who really got the American Camel Corps program off the ground ended up being a central figure for the Confederacy during the Civil War. Which one of these men was it? Was it A, Jefferson Davis, B, Ulysses S. Grant, or C, Bradford P. Beauregard?
I have absolutely no idea. This is a complete, it's like throwing a dart and just seeing where it lands. So I'm going to eliminate the last name because I didn't care for it. And then I'm going to flip the coin.
You just didn't
Grant.
Like the name.
Yeah. A was Grant. I'm sorry. A would have been.
A was Jefferson
heads.
Davis.
B.
And B is yeah. Ulysses S. Grant. And Matt is now holding a coin, which he has flipped. And yeah. what did we land on?
It landed on Grant, which to me is like, I don't know if that's correct or not. My gut says to go with A, but my gut's been wrong all day. B.
B? The answer is A. You should have gone with the gut, Matt. Your gut is leading you in the right way. You're fighting it. You're fighting your gut. Never do that. Jefferson Davis was the president of the Confederacy during the Civil War, but he was a U.S. senator who helped get the American Camel Corps off the ground. You're 0-3. This is. I feel like I need to get you a question about World's Greatest Magic. I did email you recently because I know that World's Greatest Magic, for those of you who are listening who aren't magicians, when we were growing up, it was the premier television program for magic. I mean, this was sort of, it filled the gap between the David Copperfield specials and the David Blaine specials in terms of magic on television. And it featured a bunch of magicians who were working pros, but not everyday names. And so we got to see this amazing stuff. Matt knows every word of these by heart. And so I emailed you recently to ask you the name of one of the tracks, the background tracks.
It was hilarious made because you sent a voice memo of you singing the song, which doesn't have words, by the way, just like, but you hummed it.
Yeah,
it was quite good. I knew which song you were talking about right away.
Yeah, it was used by so many different acts. And it's like a only two different acts. I should have known better than
on the show. But then since it was on TV, lots of other magicians, I'm sure, adopted it. So you've probably seen it used many times elsewhere, too.
Yeah. So I'm going to right now play that for you. This is not the real song.
Oh, you're going to.
This is not the real song. Okay. This is me singing that song.
Yes.
So here's my rendition of what I wanted to, that what I thought that song sounded like. There you go. And so that's me singing the song that you quickly identified as a song called "Eclipse."
Of course.
By who is it by?
Classic. It was for Cirque du Soleil.
So now I'm gonna play you a little bit of the real song. Here it is. This is what I was trying to sing. I was pretty close. That wasn't bad.
Actually you were right on, because that melody is slightly different than the one you did, but the one that was on TV, you matched perfectly. This was the original version before they like ripped it off for TV or whatever they did. So you did it actually right on.
You're so familiar with these television shows that not only do you know the song that they used for the show, you know the song that they based it on, the real song, and how they are different. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I even like have all the music. Some guy tracked it all down somehow. He's like crazier than me in like the UK or something. And he made a whole website about it. Pretty crazy.
That's incredible. Is there anywhere online you can see the world's greatest magic shows?
There used to be. Sometimes they get pulled on and off and stuff like that because, you know, copyright or whatever. But yeah, you can still find clips, I'm sure.
Incredible. Incredible. Well, you're 0 for 3. We've got two more questions. This is question number 4. And for this question, we're playing for an embarrassing onstage story. So if you get it wrong, you've got to tell me an embarrassing story of something that's maybe happened to you while performing, whether from the road or from your nightly show. If you get it right, I'll tell you.
Well, that'll be easy.
You have some stories.
That'll be easy for both of us.
Oh, I'm sure. When I listen to your podcast and you guys tell stories, I often say, like, I feel like I'm sitting in the room with you, which I think is a testament.
Right.
It sounds like, you know, when we get together and tell stories about the road, some of the stuff that has happened. Mm-hmm. And recently, it was a conversation you guys had about, have you ever not gotten to a gig and how do you deal with that? I think it was a mailbag question.
Right.
And how do you deal with that? And, oh, man, I have. You know, I was like, I got 3 stories about that. Let's chat, you know. So we can talk about an onstage story from either one of us based on whether or not you get this right. Which one of these animals is the closest relative to the camel? Is it A, the llama, B, the horse, or C, the goat?
Not a horse. It's got to be a llama or a goat. What does a llama look like? Is that a humpback thing? I don't expect you to answer me. It's kind of rhetorical here.
I just want to point out that once again, you've quickly eliminated B, and it's a split between A or C.
Yeah, once again. I've done that previously, and it was B, but I'm feeling good that it's not a horse.
Okay.
Because a camel and a horse, no. But a llama looks like a camel, and a goat is like a whole different shape. It's smaller. I'm going llama.
Matt, you're 1 for 4. You have gotten this one right.
Woo!
Llamas and camels.
Tell that embarrassing stuff.
That's right. Llamas and camels are actually cousins. They both belong to the camelid family. There are 7 members of the camelid family. So dromedary camels, those are the ones with one hump. Bactrian camels have 2 humps. Wild Bactrian camels, llamas, alpacas, vicuñas, and guanacos. So there you go. I bring this up at every show, not during the show, but before the show. I have a rule when I have a little laminated card and I hand it to the person who's going to introduce me. And it's got like 2 or 3 sentences on who I am. I would love to not have to have any sort of introduction, but I feel like it helps like let the audience know the show's about to start. And
of course,
when I hand it to the person, a lot of the times it's a younger person who doesn't have much experience introducing someone. And so I say, I have one rule. My one rule is that you find me and you and I have a face-to-face conversation immediately before you walk out there and introduce me. And the reason I have this is because of this story. And I think this happened when I was traveling and performing with the Show Off Show. There was the Show Off Show, which was Jonathan Burns and Evan Young performed for several years as the Show Off Show. It was like a 2-man comedy magic juggling stunt show, and I would do my 45 minutes or whatever, and I was backstage. There was on the back wall of the stage, there was a restroom next to the dressing room, and I was in that restroom with like a last minute emergency restroom break. Okay. And I told them, you know, the show was advertised for 7 p.m. I told them we're probably going to start just about on time. So to their credit, they took that very literally. There was a monitor in the bathroom, a monitor speaker, so I could hear the pre-show music. And I'm in the bathroom thinking, okay, we'll start a few minutes late. I did tell, you know, the person, like, we'll start on time, but we'll start a few minutes late. And I'm mid job in the bathroom, emergency job, emergency, you know, dump. And
midstream.
And I hear the beginning of my intro. Even if there had been maybe hey, how's everyone doing tonight? We've got some upcoming events we want to tell you about. No, none of that. It was straight into the entertainer you're about to meet.
Right.
I know that there is about 7.5 seconds at this point.
Yeah.
I'm still in the bathroom. There's no chance of me just like cutting it off and going. Like it's going to be a minute.
You can't.
No, it's not healthily. So for safety's sake, I was relegated to just sitting there, not only hearing my introduction, hearing my name, and then hearing the audience cheer.
Right.
right. all through the monitor, and absolutely nothing, just sitting there. And so that's when I mean, and they had to wait like, you know, 2 or 3 minutes before I came on stage. And I didn't tell the audience anything, you know, I just let them wait. It was super embarrassing for me. I'm not going to start the show by telling them, sorry, I was in the bathroom. That would be embarrassing, too. That's my story. And I know you got the question right and you don't owe us an embarrassing story, but we have you here and the listeners want to know. This is a question that as magicians, we get quite often. So rather than an embarrassing story, I'll just ask you the question that we get asked. Have you ever messed up a trick?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's funny you were talking about like wanting to jump in the conversation when you hear these stories. I had a very similar bathroom story.
Oh yeah.
But that won't be the one here because it is so similar. not exactly the same, but similar enough. But yeah, the one that's most memorable, like in recent times, is I do in magic what's called an impossible location routine, where you borrow an item and it appears somewhere impossible, right?
Sure.
And in this case, it's a bill. And I've been doing this for many years now, making it appear in a ramen package, the flavor packet of a ramen package. Now I've done probably several different methods of it. And now it's finally, you know, might be done. Anywho, every time the method changes, there are things that could go wrong. And I had just implemented this new method that made it really seamless and amazing. And I was really proud of it. And the guy is on stage and he opens the package and I never touch anything. And he's holding the flavor packet in his hand. And as he's tearing it open, I'm kind of really staring at it and thinking, there's no bill in there.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Because we have a pile of like 1,000 packages.
Yeah.
And he selects one from the big pile. And it wasn't in there. So that meant to me, it's got to be somewhere else. and I won't be able to find it finish this bit. So that was what happened.
Now, how do you get out of that? What do you remember how that ended?
Yes, I do. It took about 90 minutes to solve. Well, not quite, maybe 75 minutes to solve, because that's about 15 minutes into the show. So I continue on with the show. I played off as a joke. Oh, that would have been really great, though. Thanks. Go back to your seat. Everybody laughs. We move on. Sure. Now, everyone backstage is trying to find this $100 bill. Eric open ramens, doing whatever they do. So now I have to figure out how to incorporate this back into the show in a way that makes sense. And during an interlude, I was able to, they found the bill and they were able to get it to me. So I tried to load it into a different volunteer's pocket during a part where I like make a card appear in someone's breast pocket. It was
sure.
And the guy's suit was new. So it was,
oh, he hadn't opened the pocket yet. Oh,
so that was a fail. Jeez. Then I thought, okay, later on in the show, there's another even more impossible location routine. With a cell phone,
maybe
I can have the bill appear with the phone. That'll be amazing.
Yeah.
And that failed too.
Oh, no.
That failed too. So the final solution was to make it appear in the original volunteer's pocket at the very end of the show. And that did work.
Good.
But it was a whole circus getting there.
And that is why the show is called Magic Reinvented Nightly. Sometimes not by Matt's choice, but by necessity, it has to be reinvented.
Something.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It was
man.
Something.
Thank you for sharing that story. That's amazing.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, Matt, you're 1 for 4. We have one final question. This one is not a multiple choice. This one is just for you to answer, and it's for all the marbles. So if you get it wrong, I am banning you from this podcast. You will never be asked on this podcast again. Here's your question.
Is that the rule?
That's the rule.
So what happens if I get it?
If you get it right, you're welcome back on the show anytime. And I may try to find
that's
you again.
That's the
stakes.
Okay, that's the thing. Okay,
yeah, okay.
Gotcha. And now, is this like a right or wrong, or is it an essay question where I can BS my way through?
I don't know. You'll have to be the judge of that. You'll have to be the judge of that. The question is this. What magic YouTube video does everyone need to see?
That's a really hard one to answer because there's no one single true answer.
And I think you're better suited to answer this than most people I know, because you are very knowledgeable about magic, not only about magic, but about like what's out there.
But I'm also biased in terms of taste.
So I want to know what your taste tells us is good.
I keep coming back to, because to me it's sort of timeless. I keep coming back to, well, there are a few manipulation acts, but I would say Jeff McBride's appearance on World's Greatest Magic 2, where he does the masks and the cards.
Yes.
Because even though, gosh, that goes back, that was in 95. So it's a lot of years ago. Yet still it's like different than what people would expect to see from a magician. It's so out there and so like unique, especially not only for its time, but like even still, you think magician and you that's not what you're expecting to see, that mask thing. It's just so dynamic the way it opens up. And the music to me is timeless too. And the music was composed for the act. So to me, that's kind of a real piece of art. But then the whole second half of the act, he goes into the card manipulation stuff, which is like really difficult sleight of hand, awesome stuff that looks amazing. And the card throwing at the end and the bouncing. I mean, the act was kind of perfect and they did a great job of capturing it in that particular show with the jib shots and everything. And the I would say Jeff McBride's appearance on World's Greatest Magic 2.
That is a correct answer. You're welcome back on the show. You didn't get it wrong. That was the first time I ever saw cards being scaled like that, cards being thrown into the audience, and especially cards bouncing off the stage. You don't think of a playing card as something that can bounce. And when you watch this, it looks impossible. And it's not magic, that part of it, but it is incredible. It's beautiful to watch. And it has, I mean, that one appearance put him on the map for a lot of magicians. Many people weren't familiar with his work until then.
And we take it for granted now because we're so familiar with it. But you're right, the bouncing of the cards and the scaling of the cards, and like nobody talks about the way he was doing it choreographed to the music.
Sure.
Right? Because he had studied dance and so on. And I mean, everything was to the music. Yeah. And it was just it was another level. And it was kind of goes back to what we were talking about. A lot of the other acts, almost every single other act on the show had to take their commercial music that they couldn't use it. And then in the studio, they had to create a track similar to it.
Sure.
That they could use for the TV rights. Right? But because that music was composed for Jeff McBride for that act, he was allowed to use it because he owned the rights to it. So it kind of put it in its own class. It was very cool.
It absolutely did. Well, I really appreciate you being on the podcast. I'm happy to have you on anytime. You can get tickets to Matt Franco's show, Magic Reinvented Nightly, at the link in Las Vegas. You can go to Caesars.com. Where do you normally tell people to go to buy tickets? Is Caesars just the best place
to do it? MattFranco.com. You can go to Ticketmaster.com. Wherever you go to buy tickets, you know, hopefully you'll find it there. If you know how to use Google, if the internet says it's true, it is. You can find it online.
The internet says you can find tickets online. You can also follow Matt online. Just remember that it's Matt with one T. Thank you so much for joining me, Matt. And it's great to see you.
Always good to see you, buddy.
That is all for this week. Thank you so much to Matt Franco. And thanks to you for tuning in. Here's the voice of a camel.
Thank you for listening to The Internet Says It's True. To listen to episodes ad-free and a week early, support us on Patreon. You can do that at patreon.com/Michael Kent. If you learned something just now that you didn't already know, go to the Apple Podcast app and leave us a review with 5 stars and a few words. That helps us a ton, because that's how the algorithm works. I don't know what an algorithm is, but just do it! See you next week for a brand new episode of The Internet Says It's True!
The Internet Says It's True would like to thank the Patreon subscribers whose monthly contributions help to make this show possible. Sean Brown, Joshua Endres, Dallas Ray, Bryce Swanson, Eugene Anderson, Jim and Joanne Martin, Mitch and Andrew Joseph Kemplin, and the show's official Emperor, Kick Track. The show is written and produced by me, Michael Kent. The theme song is by Finite Music Forge, and all audio clips in this episode are used for education and commentary and used under Fair Use Title 17 USC Section 107. You can listen to past episodes by searching for The Internet Says It's True wherever you get your podcasts, and you can see bonus content at patreon.com/Michael Kent.